Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Driscoll of the Special Features Division of the Mutual Network, speaking from the edge of Mummersburg Road, the dividing line between the Union and Confederate Army camps on the historic battlefields of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, seen this weekend at the 75th anniversary celebration of the Battle of Gettysburg and the second and last reunion of the veterans of the North and South. Through the facilities of Station WFMD in Frederick, Maryland, the Mutual Network will bring its coast-to-coast audience all of the color and historical significance of this memorable weekend, which will be culminated by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's dedication of the Eternal Light Peace Monument Sunday evening. Stretching out on either side of our broadcasting point on Mummersburg Road are the two great encampments of the Civil War armies. On our right is the Union camp, and on our left is the Confederate camp. Tents as far as the eye can see in the dusk of a hot summer's night. Union men and Confederates swapping stories like old comrades. And it is particularly fitting that the veterans' camp should be pitched here on Oak Ridge, hard by this road over which the two armies clashed. For it was right here on July 1st, 1863, that Brigadier General John Buford of the Union Cavalry Corps collided inadvertently with a Confederate advance under the command of General A.P. Hill, commander of the 3rd Confederate Corps in the first engagement of the Battle of Gettysburg, a three-day battle which most critics agree was the turning point of America's bloody war between the North and South. Here with me is Charles Godwin of the Mutual Network staff, who has not only made a hobby of the history and lore of the Civil War, but who is one of the country's best authorities on the subject. So it is with pleasure that I introduce him to you now, not as the announcer many of you know, but as an outstanding commentator on Gettysburg.
We are met on a great battlefield of that war, and it is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. Two immortal phrases of Abraham Lincoln, delivered on November the 19th, 1863, seem to have new significance tonight. The great emancipator also said that day, the world can never forget what they did here. And his words seem more prophetic tonight as all America turns its eyes and its ears to this small village in south-central Pennsylvania, where 75 years ago tomorrow, there opened the greatest military combat ever to occur on American shores, the Battle of Gettysburg. We're speaking, as Dave Driscoll told you, from the encampment on the western edge of the town of Gettysburg, where about 2,500 of America's War Between the States veterans are gathered to hold a final blue and gray reunion, meeting, to swap stories, eating, sleeping, in fact, living all over again in their minds all the events of the four-year struggle to save the Union. Where 75 years ago, cannon blazed in big artillery duels, tonight only electric lights flick off one by one as tired, excited, talked-out old men prepare to go to bed to be fresh again tomorrow for more celebrating, more fighting, and, of course, more of the proverbial story-swapping. Tonight, as Pennsylvania moves its state capital to this point temporarily, as picked motor troopers move into position, along with the regular United States Army, the National Guard, the Boy Scouts, batteries of press photographers, reporters and radio men, their minds turn back to this same spot 75 years ago, where great names such as Robert E. Lee and daring deeds fire the imagination. The very air itself breathes Robert E. Lee, George G. Meade, Jeb Stuart, James Longstreet, and it takes little imagination, we'll say, to see Pickett's men lining up ready for their fatal charge on the morrow, or to picture in the mind's eye the Louisiana Tigers of Ewell's Corps engaging in hand-to-hand combat with the 12th Union Corps and ultimately being driven off of Culp's Hill just south of Gettysburg. But before we allow our enthusiasm to run rampant, may we set the historical background of this battle itself so that our subsequent celebration of its 75th anniversary may become perhaps more clear to our listeners. Well, for 2 years before the battle, the Civil War had raged, and for 2 years the Confederate troops, under the guidance of the Idols of the South, Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, had beaten the best the Federal Army could offer. In every major battle up to Gettysburg, the tide was with the South, and though outnumbered and hampered by a lack of supplies, arms, and men, the rebels had turned back 6 Union generals, saved the capital at Richmond, cleared the Shenandoah Valley, and had actually threatened the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Reviewing quickly in order, the rebels first smashed the Union Army from the first engagement at Bull Run in July 1861, chasing the Union General McDowell all the way back to the suburbs of Washington, D.C. itself. Then came McClellan at the Battle of Richmond in the 7 Days Battle, and McClellan was chased back to Harrison's Landing, where he fled back to the defenses of Washington in Union gunboats. The next general was the blustering Pope, who was defeated by Stonewall Jackson at Cedar Mountain. Stonewall Jackson later defeated Pope after a complete ride around his entire army at the Second Battle of Manassas. Lincoln, then sorely harassed and up a stone wall, so to speak, put McClellan back into power. And McClellan, in desperation, stove off Lee at the Battle of Antietam. The battle actually ended in a draw, as most historians say, but McClellan was not given credit for a victory because he failed to follow through on his checking of Lee's army at Antietam. Then the dashing Burnside, being cut to pieces, dashing his army against the Confederate Stonewall defenses at Mary's Hill around Fredericksburg. Then came Fighting Joe Hooker at Chancellorsville, and Jackson's famous flank march around his army to defeat Fighting Joe and drive him back over the Rapidan. And that battle, incidentally, marked the death of Stonewall Jackson, and perhaps, if you let your imagination play a little bit, the death of our Confederacy, too. However, while these events were transpiring on the fields of Virginia, a different story was written out in the West and along the coastlines, where the Confederacy was slowly being cut off from supplies from Europe. And more important, the last stronghold of the Mississippi was being besieged by two rising stars of the Union cause, Generals Grant and Sherman. The Mississippi must be held. How to do it became the problem, and of three suggestions from Southern generals, one was chosen: an invasion of the North to threaten Pennsylvania's great cities of Philadelphia and Harrisburg, and the nation's capital at Washington. Perhaps if things went well, even New York City itself. That, they thought, should certainly kill any effects the fall of Vicksburg might have, and might even force Union troops to withdraw from Vicksburg and defend their home country. But there were also other big stakes to be gained, too. The Army of Northern Virginia had shown marvelous staying power in playing a purely defensive game, but recognition from the foreign powers of Europe was not to be won that way. And Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy and diplomat of the first degree, had long ago decided that England and France should be in the thick of the fighting, but under the stars and bars of the Confederacy. Hadn't France won independence for the United States years before? Perhaps if they could be shown which way the tide was surging, they could do it again for the South. And so, with the Confederate Commissioner Slidell whispering in one ear of the Emperor Napoleon, an offensive campaign was decided upon. Reorganizing his army into three corps under Longstreet, Ewell, and A.P. Hill, Lee began his route northward up the valley of the Shenandoah into the north. Pursued on the other side of the Blue Ridge Mountains by the Union General Hooker and the entire Army of the Republic, numbering some 90,000 men. And then Lee began his raid of Pennsylvania's fertile countryside. Once before, you'll recall, the Confederates had tried this northward invasion and had been turned back at Sharpsburg. But now, with approximately 60,000 men in the highest of spirits, with morale at its very highest, and with big stakes to be gained, the South was again going north for a second try. Late in June, President Lincoln replaced Hooker with General George Meade, who followed close on Lee's heels until Gettysburg. The story of the 3 days' battle at Gettysburg is too long to be told in our short 15-minute program, but you'll recall the stirring events. First, Heth's division of A.P. Hill's corps leading the advance and colliding inadvertently with General Buford's cavalry on the first day of July in 1863, and that precipitated our Battle of Gettysburg. There followed the famous second day's battle when General Longstreet of the South attacked the Union troops at the Battle of Little Round Top and Devil's Den, and the immortal saga of the Peach Orchard and the Wheat Field were written on that second day. And the third day, and the immortal Pickett and his famous charge across 0.9 mile of shell-swept field, only to reach a high water mark on Cemetery Ridge and later to be repulsed by the Union Army. And of course that, as historians will almost to a man agree, broke the backbone of the Confederacy. The next day, July the 4th, Lee began his slow, mournful, and very sad retreat back to the Welcome Hills of Virginia. And the next day, Vicksburg in Mississippi fell. And so, that, we hope, has summed up for you in a few words something of the historical background of this Battle of Gettysburg. And now, if time permits, we're going to scout around the encampment and perhaps pick up one or two of the veterans. And while we scout around, we'd like to introduce Bob Longstreet, who is Director of Program Operations for Station WFMD in Frederick, Maryland, through whose facilities our broadcast is reaching you tonight. Here is Bob Longstreet with a word.
Good evening. The Mutual Network extends the hand of fellowship to the people of the nation. We're technically, though not actually, standing on the Mason-Dixon line, that longtime famous boundary of the North and the South. Actually, this broadcast reaches you from a point on the Murmansburg Road where that main traffic artery enters the corporate limits of the city of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And in those two words, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, lies a world of meaning, a world of mixed emotion that interlock as the blended colors of the rainbow. For not only is this a colorful sight, it's one of happiness and jollity and, above all, of peace. Tomorrow, one of the greatest displays ever attempted will begin to unfold across the stage of a dozen square miles of picturesque southern Pennsylvania rolling farm and woodland. The actors, men of other years, men whose minds go back and back through the years and think of things that never somehow found their way into the history books of 75 years ago. Today, these men, in the remnants of once proud uniforms of every rank, gray-beardedly take their ease on camp stools, in easy chairs, canes by their sides, and smoke ancient pipes and tell ancient stories. In short, ladies and gentlemen, the Mutual Network tonight takes you behind the scene of the 75th reunion of the Blue and the Gray, not to bring vivid description of the swelling town of Gettysburg, proud host of the thousands who make our community blood run faster, but behind the scenes to bring you the human, the everyday, man-to-man personalities of the actors in this great dramatic display. There can never be another Gettysburg reunion. This is the last, for Father Time is slowly cutting the ranks of the actors. But tonight we banish that thought to bring you glimpses of the youthful spirits that we've found in the aging bodies of the veterans of the Civil War who've come many thousands of miles to extend the hand of fellowship to one another, be they in blue or gray. With the scene thus set, in the midst of our two encampments of the North and the South, here's Charles Godwin back again, and I think he has an interesting old gentleman in tow. All right, Charles.
Mr. Robert P. Schott, who is 91 years old and hails from Dallas, Texas, is up here in Gettysburg today for two reasons. Specifically, of course, to attend this final Blue and Gray reunion. But more specifically, even than that, he is looking for the Yankee soldier who shot him in the eye. Now, Mr. Scott, suppose you tell us where you were shot in the eye and something about your battlefield experiences in the Civil War.
I died in 64, White County, Arkansas. I was 15 years old, going on 16. We fought the Yankees from Duval Bluff in the edge of Missouri. And on White River, between West Point and Searcy, we crossed, 25 of us crossed the river. We met 125 Yankees. We run together. I let them have two loads of my shotgun, and Doc Raven let them have two. I fell off my horse, and they left, me there alone. I walked around, you know, I was just like a bummy. I didn't know what was the matter with me. I was shot on the eye and in the jaw, and I walked around and got myself together, and I went up to one and shot a Yankee. I said, what can I do anything for you? He gave me a cuss word, and that scared me up. And I took to the woods, went about a half mile, I got to a fence. I saw a house over on about a quarter of a mile, and I went over there, and the old lady come out and says, what's the matter, son? I said, I'm shot. She said, where you live? I said, I live below West Point, about 8 miles. My father's named John Scott. She said, well, come in. And she tore up an old pillow slip, washed my mouth, and done the best she could. And the next day, the old man put me on a sharp-boned horse, and I rode behind him and went home. And when I got...
Well, Mr. Scott, if you'll pardon my saying so, home is probably a good place to be and after some of those Civil War battles,
yeah.
Too. Well, that was a story from the Confederate side, and now we'd like to call to the Mutual microphones Mr. F.G. Pitt, who, although he hails from Orlando, Florida, has been telling us before our broadcast that he fought in the Union cause in the Civil War. Now, Mr. Pitt, in just about 45 seconds, tell us briefly your most harrowing experience in the war between the states.
I enlisted in Brooklyn, New York, in the 158th Regiment. The first battle I was in was at Chapin's Farm, and we took the fort, and then I was shot in the throat, but the bullet never hurt me. It fell down my feet. I picked the bullet up. I said, I'm shot, but I'm not hurt. Again, I was shot, hit again at Appomattox Courthouse. We caught the rebels there, and I was shot there, but never got hurt.
Well, Mr. Pitt, were you actually at the courthouse when the surrender of Lee to Grant took place?
Yes, I was at that place, and as we stopped for 4 days. When they got there, the enemy was starving, and so our general gave the crackers to the enemy, and we had to wait 4 days before we get in because the rain stepped in. We couldn't get anything to eat for 4 days.
All right, Mr. Pitt, thank you. Mr. Sam Snow of Massachusetts is standing by us. Mr. Snow, unfortunately, our time doesn't permit of putting any more of the veterans on the air, so if you'll pardon me, I'll just sort of sum up things here and tell the audience what we've been doing. We've been speaking from the Confederate and Union encampment on the field of the Battle of Gettysburg.